Hello and welcome back to Layover Podcast. This is the finale of this season of The Layover and this corresponding season of Jetlag the Game. But I think the first and foremost question is, Ben, what happened?
That is the question for this round, isn't it? What happened?
Hillary Rodham Clinton's what happened?
Well, we did real bad. And I don't know that it was our fault. I think Adam did a very good job. I think that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what I want to admit more, that we did badly or that Adam did well.
Yeah, it's a real kind of catch-22.
Yeah. What else could I blame it on?
I would just not acknowledge it at all.
Yeah.
I think you should just be like, yeah, congratulations to me, Sam, for winning this season of Jetlag the Game.
In this season of Jetlag the Game, in this episode, things happened. Occurrences occurred.
Without a doubt.
And events unfolded.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like the, like, description of, like, an episode of, like, a late season of, like, Breaking Bad or something on Netflix. You know how, like dramas, once you get to like the later seasons, they have the little description of episodes and it has to be so vague so it doesn't give anything away. Mm-hmm. It's always just like, in the finale of Breaking Bad, long-awaited events unfold to various characters.
Yes.
Well, that is actually exactly what happens in the finale of Breaking Bad.
I know. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's inaccurate.
So I guess like maybe the place to start is the start.
Mm.
Because the interesting thing about this game, of course, is that there is this sort of like fundamental, unfairness is not really the right word, this fundamental sort of like lumpiness in the structure where we are randomly allocated which order we go in, mm-hmm. and then that's decently impactful on our ability to win or lose. I know that like sometimes people will complain about that, but at the end of the day, it's kind of the only way to do a game like this because, I mean, I think we explained this in our game design episode in more depth, but like we didn't want to do everyone just gets one run because, I mean, I feel like a scenario where we each only get one run would be even more unfair to Adam as the first person.
Right, yeah.
Because like you were clearly at a major disadvantage the first run just based on having no idea what was,
right,
you know, sort of like advantageous strategically in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the intention was that the first run would be balanced by those two elements. Like it was most likely to have a second run, but it was also most likely to be the worst run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like there were lots of scenarios. Like overall, the runs in this game went a lot longer than we thought they would on average. Like we expected a given run to go for like 6 or 7 hours, and we ended up having two runs that were much longer than that. Like we really expected that whoever would go second would also get a second run.
Yeah.
And probably that the third person would also get a second run.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like a pretty unlikely outcome that did ultimately favor Adam, but like was not.
Yeah.
But again, I would also argue like if you were the third runner and you got to go twice, you are then a significant advantage of you got to do both your runs with maximum knowledge. So like,
yeah,
you know, but yeah, I think the truth is that like any way you do it is a little unfair. We did it this way because one, we just have to put a time limit on our shoots for boring logistical work reasons. Like we can't just be like, we don't know how long we'll be in Switzerland. Especially Sam can't do that because he has other channels to run. And then also the order was randomly allocated, so any unfairness was ultimately still made fair again by the fact that it was, yeah, randomized who got any, you know, slight advantage through that.
And that's kind of like a fundamental game design principle that I think we try to follow whenever possible. It's, yeah, like almost any game has unfairness. We just try to shift that unfairness into randomness.
Yes.
Because it's fine if it's randomly unfair. It's a lot less fine if it's unfair in a way that gives an advantage to a specific person.
Right.
I mean, it's the same thing to be said for like normal sports. There's always unfairness. Like the home team has an advantage. The team throwing into the wind has a disadvantage. I don't really know how football works.
Right. But well, yeah, exactly. Like in sports, it's like, you know, in overtime, getting to decide if you kick or receive is an advantage. So they do a coin flip and then it's randomly allocated. So like,
yeah,
the randomness makes the unfairness fair because it's random. Anyway, yeah.
I feel like we're defending this to the level that people are going to perceive it as a bigger deal than it is.
Yeah.
But no, not that many people were complaining, but just to explain kind of the way that we think about this sort of thing. We do need to do a game one day, a solo game where Sam gets to go first, in my opinion.
You explicitly did not want to go first because you didn't want to have to get up in the morning.
Just for sleep reasons.
No, I know.
Look, and I'll say it again. We were both relieved when we did not go first in this game.
Yeah.
And Adam was slightly pissed.
It's true.
Yeah, as is logical. And one last point on this is like, what we have seen is that just as we all get better at playing these games, like, you know, it was very clear from tag one to tag two, like our average runtime, I think more than doubled actually, or at least like cleanly doubled.
Yeah.
And I think it's also the case that like, had we played hide and seek a year and a half ago, we probably would have had at least more than kind of the four runs that we ended up having. So to an extent, I think we just kind of need to make our games harder, actually. I mean, it's not really harder. It's like, well, I mean, it kind of is harder.
Harder for the individual player.
Yeah. Yeah. Harder whoever is advantaged to do a longer thing, basically.
Yes. We need to make the person who's trying to do something for a long time, we need to make their job harder.
Yes. So that we can rotate through more.
Yes.
I think just to accommodate our level. And I think if we ever did tag again, I think almost certainly we would try to find either a geography or some different rules that would do that as well.
Hmm.
And similar deal with hide and seek if we were to do that again. But yeah, so Adam.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember how much you explained last episode in terms of your location decision. Not much, right?
I didn't explain much.
Yeah.
Because the penultimate episode leaves things pretty vague.
Yeah.
You just see me like running in the darkness and then I'm really out of breath and I go like, I made it. I hope this works. So I don't think the audience knew much going in.
Yeah. So Adam, I know that you were quite pleased with your location selection.
I was quite pleased.
And rightly so, because ultimately, like, of course, like the location always matters for the win, but like it was very specifically where you went.
Mm-hmm.
That led to us not finding you. I mean, that sounds like a truism for this game, but like, I'm trying to articulate that right. It was a very fine selection of your exact location.
Yes.
Rather than like you just going to a different area of the country that we didn't identify or something.
Right.
It was exactly where you went.
Mm-hmm.
And its exact properties that ultimately led to us not finding you.
It's true.
So I think you're right to be pleased about it. Do you want to go into a little bit more detail about how and why you chose that?
Yes. Well, I'll start by talking about sort of what my overall plan making process was like and then how I landed on this. So I'll start off by saying, like, I did not go into this run when I got on the train with this plan. Like, when we caught you, I just started running to the nearest station, Winterthur Toss, so I could make the train to get to the Winterthur main station. And then I just was like, I'm going to get on a train, like the train towards Bern, which is like a high speed line. And I was like, I'll figure it out from there.
Here's a question I'll ask. So you basically took the approach of, I want to go as far away as I can within the time that I have, which like, I don't want to make it seem like we had some massive strategic coup this episode, because obviously we didn't. But like that aspect did make it easier for us to do the long game.
Yeah.
So why did you decide to kind of continue to do the approach that pretty much everyone did except for me, actually, of really just going as physically far as you could?
I would say that it was a little less about going as physically far as I could until I developed my plan, which was very much based around that. My choice to just go towards Bern was essentially just that I wanted to try going to like an area with a dense amount of rail where I could go to sort of like a suburby area. That was sort of my first plan.
Mm-hmm.
My original plan was to sort of, Sam, run back what you did, but instead of going to the major city, go to a totally random suburb somewhere like 5 to 10 miles outside of the city, of which there are many. Mm-hmm. Because when we got to the Winterthur area, there were like 20, 30 towns we were like, you might be in.
Yeah.
And we were like, if we have to figure out which one, that's going to be really hard. And then it was easier because it turned out you were in Winterthur.
Yeah. Like ultimately, in retrospect, that's like what I should have done. And had I done that, it very possibly could have been a winning run, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a good point that like effectively your strategy was kind of exactly that.
Right. And I mean, we don't even get into the end game, but like I did want to go somewhere that had woods. Mm-hmm. So like my plan, if you showed up, was to hide in woods. And so originally I was looking at, I'm trying to find like specifically where I was going to go. I think I was going to go to like, I had found some stations that had a lot of woods. I think I was going to go to Zollicoffen, which had like a woods on either side of it. And just like a lot of woods. Mm. And I was like, I was going to go somewhere that was basically all woods. And I was just going to hide in the woods and do that. And so I thought about that for a while. But then I decided not to do it for two reasons. One was sort of that I didn't want to just copy what you did, because I was like, that would be a lame way to win. But second was that like, I thought that you guys would see that coming. I thought that if I went to a place and you figured out broadly where I was relatively quickly, and then I was just in the woods, Ben and I had just learned a lot about like how to ask a bunch of questions to triangulate somebody in the woods. So I was like, I don't think that that trick is going to work well again. It's sort of similar to how like Ben used the rhymes really effectively once, but I don't think that someone could have done another rhyme trick well, because we would have been like ready for it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a similar thing with the woods.
Well, like I effectively did try to do a bit of a rhyme trick again, but I tried to do it in a different way, because my approach was to rhyme with just the most number of places overall in the country. So like I did rhymes with the most common endings of names, but like y'all totally didn't fall for it. Because I think it's like the interesting part about this game is like the prior rounds not only inform strategy, but they also inform like what you expect the other person to do. Mm-hmm. And so much of this is about deducing what you expect them to do.
Yeah.
I will say that there's still a degree to which certain strategies are kind of just like brute force the most effective.
Yeah.
And like, I think it still would have sucked if you had gone into the woods.
No, I agree.
Even if we knew from the second we got there that you were in the woods, I think that just, and this is like a thing that we have to consider if we ever do this again, is like, I do think that there are some strategies that are just like sort of so good that even if they're not tricky, they're just hard to beat.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and to be clear, my plan was still to hide in the woods in the end. But I was like, I don't want that to be my whole strat. I was like, I don't think I'm going to have a winning run if I just go to like a suburb and just hide in the woods. And that's my whole plan. But it's interesting. So like, and this is something I don't think you guys know. I don't think anybody knows this except for me. I've never told anybody this. I was this close to not going where I went and going up towards, again, I think it was Zollicoffen, to the extent that you see in the footage that I get into Bern and I get off the train and I am going to transfer to go up to Zollicoffen. And then I turn around and I change my mind and I get back on the train that I was on before to continue down to Thun.
Why did you change your mind?
Because just something in my head was like, no, I want to go down to Thun. Because I thought it would be like a more interesting spot. But I didn't even totally have a plan until I was on my way to Thun. And then I figured out what I could do with the Steffensburg thing. So like, it was pretty last minute that I had that idea, that I realized I could get to Steffensburg on foot in a way that I thought would confuse you. Because I had an idea of like, maybe I'll go to Thun and like Thun is quite big and I'll set my radius somewhere weird in Thun that makes it seem like it isn't. I was sort of like, maybe I'll do what we thought you, Ben, had done. And sort of what you, Sam, did too, of like, I'm going to set my radius, but so that it's like not near the town hall and like not near the lake and not near all these things. And maybe that'll throw you off. But then as I was in the process of being like, where's a weird place I could set my zone, I saw Steffensburg. And then I was like, this will be perfect. And then that became my plan.
Mm-hmm. So, Ben, maybe it's worth talking through our side now.
Yeah.
So I think, at least for me, I went into this round optimistic. I think largely because it felt to me that both of our runs were above average. I mean, because they were well beyond our original expectation of how long rounds would take. And because in both rounds, a lot of what led to the length I think at least, was kind of just some bad strategy and bad decisions from the Seeker side. Hopefully you don't take too much offense to that for y'all's run.
But. Yeah. Well, no, I agree with that. As someone who was involved in the Seeker side of both of those, and I think this has been acknowledged quite a lot by both us and people, like, we did not ask enough questions when we were looking for Ben.
100%. Yeah.
And we actually discussed that in the footage more, and a decent amount of that got cut out just for pacing reasons of, like, we had momentum going towards Ben, and it was boring for us to stop and have this whole discussion about, like, we should have asked more questions. But, like, many people have pointed that out, and they are right. And I think Ben and I made a huge adjustment.
I think from round to round, it was really a question of, like, which side evolved more from the last round? Is it, like, has our hiding strategy gotten better, or has our seeking strategy gotten better? And coming off of the round where we were looking for you, I was like, oh, the seeking strategy just got a huge boost. Even though it did ultimately take a while to find you, I was like, I think that the seeking strategy has evolved much more than the hiding strategy ultimately over the course of this game. And so I went into that last round being like, yeah, this is going to be a cakewalk.
Well, I think that's part of the reason why I think it was smart of Adam to somewhat focus more on making the long and medium game difficult versus the short game. Because the seeking strategy had certainly evolved through trial and error on the short game side to the point where I feel like learning from the woods thing, we would have a lot easier time trying to triangulate someone in the woods and knowing what questions to ask in that scenario.
Yeah.
But of course, like, there was barely any long game with my round. So, like, yeah, there was a lot less learned on that side.
Well, I actually think that if we're thinking about it like long, medium, short game, I think that like the long game strategy evolved a lot on our end. Like, I think that we got to your general area really, really fast. And we got to Adam's general area really, really fast. Because I think that we figured out how to ask those questions. And then I think our short game got much better. I think it was the medium game that we never really improved. And I honestly think the big oversight is that we didn't have a medium game in your round. I think just due to sheer luck, a medium game didn't happen. And so I think in our heads, we were like, yeah, it's no problem. But honestly, what we should have realized is like, we didn't really have any experience being like, okay, we're in this area and now we have to figure out like which of the 150 towns is this person in?
Yeah. And ultimately, like, I say this, I think, in one of the last clips of us together, Ben, and I really meant it. It's like, it turns out that the OP strategy really is go to a place with a fuck ton of lines.
Yeah.
Because, like, the only real tricky medium game that we ever had was finding you in Merleshocken. And, of course, we had some trouble with the short game there, too. But, like, ultimately, what led to that being such a long run was largely the medium game. Because, like, of course, we spent, what, like 2 or so hours looking for you in the end. That didn't help. But what really didn't help was spending 4 hours ambling around the region.
Right.
That's what made that truly into such a mass. Like, if you think about it from the perspective of, like, if you consider the short game for Adam's first run to have started by the time we got to Andermatt, which I think is fair considering we were, like, only 2 miles away, that short game took about the same amount of time as the one in your round. But it was the medium game.
Well, I would call that like the medium game. I would say like when you got to Goschenen, you were in the medium game. I think of the short game as once you are in their town.
Yeah.
To me, that's the short game.
Yeah, it depends how you define it. But like most of the say, like the times that things really went wrong was medium game in a place with a ton of lines.
Right.
Like that seems to truly be, in retrospect, the OP strategy.
Yes.
And especially when you're able to not only take advantage of that for sort of the natural difficulty, but then do something misleading like Adam does. Mm-hmm. Like that's what turned that into a near impossible run. So I know that like, again, if we think about doing hide and seek again, I'm sure that like one of the things that we'll look at is how do we calibrate a game where now that we know this, we can make that medium game a little bit easier in a region like that with so many lines.
Totally. Well, I think there's also an interesting question to be asked of like, because I've been thinking about this, what would have been for you guys the best way to play that round in retrospect, knowing now how it played out? Because my thought on it is, I think that what ultimately hurt you guys pretty badly was over-reliance on, analysis of how far I could have gotten on lines in the time, mm-hmm. which is like a squishier science of like, and we'll get to this in a second, like that can be wrong. Trains can run at different times. Like you're analyzing that, but you're likely not going to be looking at the exact same timetables I was looking at it. That like, it's just a squishier thing versus you could have probably done more hard evidence of just like, ask a latitude in Bern, and then you know half of this area I'm not in. Like, you could have just fully eliminated slices until there was such a tiny slice left that it only had four towns in it or whatever, and then you could just know for sure I was in one of them, and then go from there.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if there's one question we should have asked but didn't, it was a latitude in Bern.
And I think there's footage of me saying that in the episode where I had like really worried about it. And then you almost ask it and then you ask a longitude.
Yeah. And of course, that's a lot easier to say in retrospect because
of course,
from our perspective, there were plenty more options to the north than the south. That's why a latitude would have been so useful, because it would have sliced out the entire north of Bern, which is where we ended up spending all of our time. But from our perspective, it didn't really make sense because it didn't have that 50-50 split that you kind of look for
in
terms of available options. But in addition to like that specific question would have been tremendously useful, we should have probably sliced things down geographically once we were in Bern a little bit more. Like, I think the reason we didn't is because we felt like we had this manageable number of places to analyze. And at the time at which we felt like we had that manageable number of places, there was plenty enough time for us to go physically check the vast majority of them, if not all of them, and also do additional questions to smartly cut them down further. So it's like, why would we risk something that could really add to our time, like a bad curse, when we're pretty confident we have a winning strategy here? Again, that's not true in retrospect, but
I'll also say that, like, we talked about doing a latitude, and ultimately we just didn't know what it would get us. Like, I think the problem ultimately was that we kept having leads, and like, there was not a time that we came away from an analysis of the map being like, well, we don't know where to go now. Like, we kept finding places that could work, and ultimately, we were like, well, we could split the map in half again, or we could go see if this is right, because actually we think this might have been our breakthrough.
Yeah. And that's ultimately the same phenomena that led to Adam and I's issue in your run.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, like, it's interesting that the exact same issue, which was an area with a ton of lines, had the exact same response by the players that kind of led to the same result, which was like chasing ghosts. Mm-hmm. So like, big takeaway now in retrospect is just like, you waste so much time by chasing ghosts.
It's true.
And that's why I think like next time I play this game, I'm pretty sure that I would try to cut things down a lot more.
I do want to add though about the curse dice, because the coins were a huge factor.
Well, here, I want to defend myself once.
This is defending you though.
Okay.
This is defending your seeking, which is that I feel like I've seen a lot of comments, which are fair, that like the curses are too easy, but it just happens to be the case that like the audience saw the easy curses. Like, I don't think anybody rolled anything higher than a 9. At any point,
I saw some Reddit comment that calculated like the statistical improbability of how bad our curse rolls were.
Yeah.
Particularly mine, I think, because it was a response to episode 4. But it made the point that, like, I think it said like every roll we've done this season was below the expected value. So I think there's an extent to which we just got unlucky from a game design perspective with what was rolled, because we certainly expected curses to be much more influential to the game.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. Like, if we ever do hide and seek again and we have a similar sort of system, like, there are curses that would have radically changed the way that this game played out.
It would have led to the winning run.
Yeah. Could have made hours of difference. And those just didn't come up, but they could, and they could have. And we were playing around those.
Right. And I also think, like, it was the case, and this is, you know, just because things are imperfect, like, the curses didn't really scale cleanly.
Yeah.
It wasn't like curses 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13 were all the same difference between each other and how bad they were. It was really more the case that, like, and I'm trying to find the list of curses. Okay, yeah, yeah. So, like, the truth is that, like, if you rolled a 1, nothing happened. 1 was the free money curse, where if you rolled a 1, you had to Venmo the seekers $5.
Oh, yeah.
If you rolled a 2, nothing happened. It was literally nothing. 3 was Swiss clock. But anyway, like, up through 9, honestly, that's the thing. Up through 9, they were all not very bad. And then starting at 10, they started to get worse. At 10, you had to ask your next question from a castle, which, depending on where you were, could take up quite a lot of time.
Curses like that are why we kept referring to the idea of, like, it matters a lot where you are right. when you do the curse.
Yes.
Because, like, does. If we had gotten the castle curse in Merleshocken, that could have taken us 3, 4, 5, I don't really know. But the fact that there's only a train an hour there means that, like,
yes.
you would lose potentially just 2 hours based on schedules.
Right. Like, a 12, you had to take a shot every time you asked a question for the next 2 hours. At 13, you had to ask your next question from a Christmas market. And then at 21, it banned for a period of time using Google Maps or the internet. And 22 through 25 all let the hider move their spot. And also, like, people have pointed out also that, like, dice rolls don't have even probabilities. Like, if you roll 4 dice, you don't have an even odds of getting 1 through 24. We knew that. That was intentional. But also it means that, like, the odds of getting really bad curses, like, start to go crazy when you get too many dice. Like, at the point at which you have 6 dice, your odds are, like, 60% that you'll be able to move your hiding spot. So, like, you guys did have, like, very real reason to be scared of getting me above certainly, like, 300 coins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, ultimately, Ben, so after we do all that chasing around,
yeah.
we still can't find, like, we get to this point where we actually basically exclude everything. Exclude all of the things that we had identified. We thought that through that process, we were doing process of elimination. So that's why I think we ultimately were not too concerned, because it's like, okay, it's not this, so it's one of the other options. But eventually we eliminate basically every reasonable, practical option some way or another. And we go back to the drawing board. And that's when we realize the point that Adam made, that, like, there's actually some squishiness here.
Yeah.
That we didn't really account for.
Well, I mean, and this is something we knew and had thought about in previous rounds, which is that, like, some kinds of information are more reliable than other kinds of information. And there's really squishy information, like the kind of inferences we would make from photos. Like, we think this is a mountain town. That could totally just be not true at all, right? Something like that could just be not true at all. But there's other kinds of information that we thought were basically 100% solid. And I think that, as Adam alluded to, I think that we probably just put too much stock in the how far could he have gotten on trains thing. Because we were just like, well, if he couldn't have gotten further, he couldn't have gotten further. It's not like he could have gotten off the train and ran like he loves to do.
Yeah, and one kind of dimension of that that we fully did not account for is the fact that on a given train line, you can have an express train and you can have a stopping train. So the methodology that we used to sort of evaluate the furthest extent of where Adam could go is we knew what time we could get to Bern, or he would have gotten to Bern. So we basically looked at, on all the different various lines, what is the furthest he can get on that line after when he arrived. But the problem is there can sometimes be two answers to that.
Yes.
That's what we didn't realize. There can be the local train answer and there can be the express train answer. And one little issue that honestly is just kind of like overly in the weeds to really acknowledge fully in the actual show, so this is pure layover content, is that we had excluded Thune based on the local option.
Right.
Thune is where you got off.
Yeah.
You got there on an express train.
Yes.
So we didn't even really think that the area around Thune was an option. because from our perspective, we had completely excluded that line, like before Thune to the north, based on local trains, I believe.
Right. Well, I think it was the case, and Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, you had looked like on the local train, because Steffisburg is actually a stop before Thune on the local train. And so I think that what you had done was sort of like the same thing in like reverse.
So there's two ways that we could have found Steffisburg.
Mm-hmm.
One is basically via Thune. We could have identified that basically you had done exactly what you did, where you went to Thune and then went on foot north.
And we did know that that was possible, like that a thing like that was possible, because you saw us check a town for that reason.
Yes. So we knew that that was possible, but we thought Thune was excluded. We had also, Steffisburg, you can get to via a different line from the north.
Right.
So the actual Steffisburg stop, that is not on the line that you went on, Adam.
Right.
To Thune. That's on a different line.
Yes.
So we had also excluded Steffisburg based on the local line down from Bern to Thune that does like this other route. And there we'd excluded it because you could have only gotten a couple stops back closer to Bern
right.
in the time you had available. So we actually excluded Steffisburg for two different reasons. One of them was right. The other one was not.
Yes. Yeah. Basically, to simplify that, it's like, not only did you exclude Thune because it didn't rhyme, you also didn't even think I could have gotten there. I do wonder, though, if I had sent you a word that rhymed with Thune, if you would have taken a closer look at it, at least.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of another issue, is like, because of our system, we had so many things to take a closer look at.
Right.
That we honestly, like in retrospect, we had too much confidence in the system where I think we knew that there were like these squishy bits that would lead to the system being slightly imperfect. But I think we were kind of just hoping that it would still be the most efficient way, not necessarily a 100% bulletproof way, but the most efficient way to find you. It wasn't, but I think that was the hope. But yeah, I don't know. We might have.
I mean, I'm pretty convinced if I had just been in Thune, hanging out in Thune, I think you would have figured that out.
Probably. I think we might have figured it out a different way.
Yeah.
But probably.
Because if you check Bern to Thune, the first thing that comes up is the express line. Like, that's the first thing Google Maps displays.
Yeah, so I think there's actually three layers then. There's the fact that it didn't rhyme, so that's why we excluded Thune itself. But then there's the part where we looked at the line down to Thune and excluded a certain number of stations north of it, I think.
Right.
Because we looked at the local one. And we excluded the other local line that goes through Steffisburg itself because of timing, too. That's all very complicated, but that's exactly why we couldn't find it.
I do think that, like, there's a really good chance, actually, if we hadn't found the Langenthal thing, that we would have reassessed all of the lines out of Bern again and maybe True. Figured it out. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that ultimately, like, we assessed all of the lines out of Bern fairly quick. And like, we got really into the Solothurn thing and we were like, he's probably there, but let's just check the other lines out of Bern. And we crossed them off. But like, those I think are the ones that we would have double checked next. And unfortunately we got distracted by the allure of Langenthal in the end.
We ended up cutting this a different way, but like, personally, I really thought it was Wiedlisbach. Like, I felt so good about Wiedlisbach when we went there. We ended up kind of structuring the episode to put less emphasis on that run. But like, by the time it was not that line to Wiedlisbach, that's the bit that comes right after I say like, oh, this is probably all going to get cut down if it's not the real thing. When I said that, I genuinely thought we were imminently in the end game.
Yeah.
Because like, it just fits so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, it was also counterintuitive, I thought. So like, it like not only fit our parameters, but like, to me, it felt like the kind of thing that Adam would have done, the kind of place he would have gone.
Well, like we had recorded, and this is just, again, kind of like an insight. Like we had recorded those clips of us being like, he might not be there. Because we were like, well, just in case he's not there. You know, it was just like, well, you know, it's good to have it just in case. But like, we kind of record those no matter how we're feeling, like just in case we need to use them. The fact of the matter is, yeah, I think we both thought that he, because if we had gotten everything right, there was no trickery, no chicanery.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he would have been. It was the only spot left.
Yeah.
Well, but Weedlessbach, wasn't that the one where you had the idea that I had messed around with the rhymes?
No.
Or was that the other place? Was that Utzendorf?
No, it was more Utzendorf. There was a moment that we don't even acknowledge on camera where we were worried that you ran down to Wangen an der Aare or like between any of these towns. Because again, part of the reason why we like this zone is it had all this weirdness with like towns that were weirdly close to each other. Mm-hmm. And we had already gotten this idea in our minds because Adam, us in round two, I also don't think we ended up really talking about this on camera much because it didn't end up being infungible. Like we got to a point where we were decently convinced that Ben might have done the thing where he was kind of answering some questions from the next
in
kind of
one area and some in the other.
Yeah. It wasn't really a town, but kind of like a inhabited area up. So like this idea was totally already in our minds, which is why we were like thinking it made a lot of sense. Cause it was kind of like a clear, strong strategy that we hadn't really seen play out yet. So, you know, it made sense to try it. But anyway, we don't have too much time. So I think maybe we want to pivot slightly to debrief and all that sort of stuff. So ultimately, Ben, of course, like we get to this point where we just realize that like we have no new leads. We're here in the middle of nowhere. We have like what, like an hour left in our game day or something. And there was just no real chance.
Yeah. After Utzendorf, we were feeling, I think, pretty cooked.
Yep.
And, you know, we were doing the thing where we're like, maybe we'll get some incidental information. Part of me even thought like, I don't know, maybe Adam will go easy on us and give us a little something. But no.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the other thing to consider is like, we kind of knew we were cooked. Adam didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
This was happening in my run a lot where I was like, there were lots of times where you guys like hadn't figured me out at all, but I was like, oh, they're coming here. I think they're about to come get me. Like we were not that far from Adam. At any moment we could have figured it out and gone and got him.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't know whether or not we'd figured it out.
Yeah, probably quite quickly.
It's yeah. true. Yeah. You were rarely more than I think 45 minutes mm-hmm. away from me.
Yeah. But ultimately, so we have this little lead out of Bergdorf, right? So we go to Bergdorf. Then we take the line down to, can you even remember the name of?
Langenthal.
Wait, Langenthal is the final spot? Wait, where is that?
Yeah, well, we went through Winnigan. We didn't even really include this, but we were like, he might be in Winnigan. We went through Winnigan to Langenthal.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We took the line from Langenthal down to Rohrbach.
Oh, yeah. Wait, we were in Bergdorf at one point, weren't we?
We were in Bergdorf before we went to Langenthal.
Oh, man. Geography is a mess.
For whatever reason, I happen to remember the names of these Swiss towns.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went from Utzendorf to Bergdorf and then Bergdorf to Langenthal.
Well, you made all these maps is why you remember.
How are these names real?
Oh, you didn't make the maps, but you.
No, I could never make the maps.
Then Rohrbach was the final spot, right?
Rohrbach was where we ended, yeah.
Yeah. It was a nice little line. This day, we got through some of the more, let's say, rugged areas of Switzerland. Is that the right?
Yeah. I mean, look, that's what I like about the channel is like you yeah. watch a travel channel go to Switzerland. They're never going to Rohrbach. They're never going to Bergdorf.
Well, Rohrbach, to be clear, that place was lovely.
That's true.
Solothurn? Eh.
Yeah. A lot of these towns did not have a lot going on.
I mean, in fairness, you sort of just saw the train station in Solothurn, as far as I saw.
Yeah, sure. The train station, though, did not have a lot going for it. And other Swiss train stations do. But I thought, like, Rohrbach and that entire line down there was a lovely little spot. And it was a nice place to crack open our white claws and decide that we were conceding.
Yep.
Yeah. And of course, I had already lost at that point, so it was kind of all down to you. But you were within minutes of losing. So everyone always seems to enjoy the behind-the-scenes post-log or whatever you call it.
Epilogue?
I don't know.
Some might call it an epilogue.
The explanation of what we did next. Part of the reason why Ben and I thought it was worth conceding rather than doing theoretically the last 30 minutes of running around was because we wanted to make sure that we could film a trophy sequence together. It's always nice when we can do that in person. It starts to get really tough to throw those that far.
Yes, it's true. It takes a toll on the arm.
Yeah.
It's heavy work.
Yeah, so it's always nice to do in person. So we did one final bout on the amazing Swiss train network to get back to Zurich Hofbahnhof.
Yep.
Which is just a great name for anything.
Or, no, sorry. Flughafen, not Hofbahnhof.
Flughafen. Oh, whoa. Yeah,
yeah. Right. It was the airport, yeah.
Both great names. But I challenged someone to tell me a better name or a better word for airport in any language than Flughafen. You simply cannot.
No, I think it's unbeatable.
No. Yeah, it is the best.
Yeah, no, it's pretty unbelievable as a name for an airport. Well, it's one of those things where, you know, like people do little memes all the time where they'll be like, when they named this thing, they really nailed it. What's like a good example? You know what I'm talking about, Ben. Like
Frog.
I feel like Ben was a pretty good name for Ben.
Thank you. Shout out to my parents.
Yeah, like Frog or like Toad.
I think Frog is the iconic example of that. Yeah, like, man, that thing is a frog.
Yeah, that thing's a frog for sure. It's like when you look at an airport, it's like, yeah, that is a Flughafen.
Yeah.
Like, for sure it is. Actually, maybe that's not true, though, because Flughafen is such a whimsical word and airports are kind of not a very whimsical place.
No. And this was not a very whimsical airport.
You don't find shooting into the sky in a metal tube with other humans whimsical?
I feel like I used to, and then I started doing this.
Yeah.
That's true. Jet lag really sucks the joy out of flying.
Not a lot of magic left.
Well, you know what's funny? Here's the thing. I feel like people who travel a lot hate planes more and like trains more.
Yes.
Because like the more I've traveled, the more I like trains and the more I hate planes. So it's not that traveling a lot just makes you hate travel. It's that traveling a lot makes you realize how bad planes are and how good trains are, I think.
Yeah, I certainly agree personally in my experience. The other thing that I've noticed is like, I always used to think like, everyone's just making too big of a deal out of the whole airport security shenanigans stuff and like all the lines you have to wait in. Like, it's really not that big of a deal, right? But now that I travel way too much, it's like the TSA lines and the waiting, like even just like the stupid way that they board planes that takes so long.
Yeah, it takes forever to board. It's the worst.
Yeah. These inefficiencies grind my gears. It's because I'm a stupid, stuck-up, privileged traveler who doesn't know how good they have it.
Well, it just is like you compare plane travel to train travel. It's just like so much less taxing. It's like,
yes,
train travel, you only have to get there a little bit before you leave. Plane travel, you have to get there hours before you leave. Plane travel, you have to go through a whole security thing. You have to like check in. You have to have all these documents. Sometimes you have to wait in a line to like check your bag to do it. Like there's all of that bullshit. And then like boarding, like you wait in a line, you get called. It's all that, like a train, you just walk on the fucking train.
Yeah. And the worst thing is the fact that you can't predict how long it will take.
No.
So like either you have to wait in line, which sucks, or you have to wait in a loud airport, which sucks.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you miss your flight, which sucks.
That would be the thing. If airport security, if the process of getting to your gate from when you arrive at an airport was always 45 minutes and it was just, you know what? That's how long it is. It's 45 minutes and that's the deal. Then you could be like, okay, I'll account for 45 minutes. But what you have to do is you always have to assume worst case scenario that it'll take 2 hours, you know, an hour 45.
Yep.
And you have to, anyway, we're just...
Yeah, we're spending too long ranting on this.
Yeah, yeah, but, no, we should move on.
And you know what? That's on Osama bin Laden. Shame on you.
Well, yeah, him and Bush, but yeah.
Two people I don't like.
Anyways, so yes, we go to the Flughafen, and we had the worst time finding a good location to film our little sequence.
And we were so tired, too.
Yeah, and it was really annoying. There was this amazing spot that was just overwhelmed by really loud finance bros, like Swiss finance bros.
Oh, you mean in front of the Christmas tree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it was the perfect spot, but it was just like so loud with finance bros because for some reason, Zurich Flughafen, it has like a whole business district mall thing kind of in the center of everything. And that's where we stayed,
right?
Like right next to the airport. So that's why we ended up with the spot where we got interrupted by trams twice. But I thought it was a great spot. We got trams, we got trees, we got the Flughafen sign. Great stuff.
There was also like a hill that you went and checked out. You like ran up this hill that you maybe wanted to film on.
Yeah. Well, Zurich Airport has a hill.
Yes.
They built a hill. I don't have further details.
Great.
But they decided that this airport needs a park on a hill. And so they made it.
But it was very dark there. So.
Yeah. I wanted to make that work. But yeah, it was too dark in the end. But anyways, then let's see. We filmed the thing.
We got dinner.
Oh, here's an anecdote.
Okay, great.
That I've told like four times.
Ooh.
Where we went to dinner at Zurich Airport at like 9 p.m. on a Thursday had a DJ.
Oh, right.
It did.
Yeah, it did. I forgot about that.
And it was like the saddest DJ gig I've ever seen.
Yeah, I did feel bad for that guy.
Well, the restaurant was almost entirely empty. It was just us, and it was not very good, but it did have a DJ.
It certainly did have a DJ.
And that's pretty much all I have to say about that. But why does this airport restaurant believe they need a DJ?
Do you have an answer? You're saying that like you have an answer now.
No, I don't.
Well, we're talking about it, aren't we? Right? We're talking about the DJ. True. So maybe that's why.
Yeah.
It was very memorable.
Because now we're having a conversation about it.
Yeah. And it wasn't even like super like DJ-y music.
No.
It was kind of just like normal music, but it happened that a DJ was doing it.
Yeah, no, he was like playing Lana Del Rey.
Yeah, like I didn't even notice that there was a DJ till like halfway through our meal. But anyways, that's all I have to say about that. My last anecdote is that the next day, I flew back to New York on a different flight from y'all, because you were going to New York, but I was also going to New York. And then I attempted to go to a White Elephant party that night. I was so exhausted that I think I probably said a total of like 15 words for the entire like 2 hours that I was at that party. I literally just like sat on the floor watching everything, too exhausted to interact with anyone. But my gift was a Swiss cowbell that I bought in the airport.
Ooh.
And it killed. People loved it. It was one of the most popular gifts, in my opinion.
Speaking of gifts, my gift anecdote is that as I was going to Zurich Flughafen from Steffisburg, I passed through Thun, which had this wonderful little like adorable Christmas market. And I got some last minute Christmas presents.
Mm.
That's why it took you so long to show up.
Well, no, because I had looked at, in fairness to me, I had looked at when the next train was and I took the soonest one I could have made, but then I had some extra time because I had to wait for the train. I got Maeve some like red flannel pajamas and I got some little purses.
What did y'all do with your extra morning in Zurich? Because you took like a evening flight back.
We actually had an awesome time. We went into the town.
We got rösti.
Yeah, we had a really good rösti. Tell them about the rösti, Ben.
Oh, I'm jealous. I love rösti.
I don't know. It's a big hash brown. What else is there to say about it, really?
Well, I don't know. Just this one was particularly good, I suppose.
It literally is. And that's like a perfect description. And that's everything that's good about it. Is like,
I know.
It turns out that you can just have a hash brown as a meal and nobody will question you if you call it a rösti.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You just make it bigger.
Yeah. Perfect principle.
Yeah. I did my classic thing of finding a good restaurant in an unfamiliar town. And we went and got rösti there and it rocked. It was so awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. And then we slept.
Then we slept. Then we went home. And then it was Christmas. And then it was New Year's.
Actually, the recovery from this jet lag was brutal because it was directly Christmas party season. I could not handle that. The direct pivot into Christmas parties every night.
I just skipped all of them.
Yeah, you did. I noticed. Wait, one of you skipped the Nebula Christmas party. Was it you, Ben?
That was both of us.
Was it both of you?
It was both of us.
Oh, okay. Amy was there.
Yeah, Amy went in our stead.
It was a great Christmas party.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
Anyway.
My phone is so hot right now. I don't know why.
Sorry.
I wasn't doing anything on it. I just grabbed it and it's really hot.
Maybe it has Chinese spyware.
Probably.
So, okay. Any big debriefs on this season? Any big things we want to say in retrospect? Here's what I'll say. This was one of our most experimental seasons from a game design perspective.
Yes.
Not necessarily the most, but one of the most.
I agree with that.
And the big thing that we were really worried about, I think, at least me personally, was like, it's kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
And slow doesn't necessarily mean bad, but like the thing that we were lacking this season was those somewhat classic jet lag moments of, oh no, there's the last train for 2 hours leaving in 3 minutes and we have to make this connection between platforms or like, you know, stuff like that. Like you don't really see that this season. Like we probably run like twice or three times the entire season.
Yeah.
So that's to say like, that's why I was so glad to see how much people are engaging with it. And, you know, it's always nice to see when, you know, especially on YouTube, when like people are willing to kind of slow down, lean back, and just experience kind of a slower, longer thing.
I think that like, and maybe it's hard to know this from the outside, but like with a relatively new show like this, especially a relatively new YouTube channel like this, it can be hard to know what ingredients are the ones that are making it work and what ingredients are necessary. And like, I think that this season gave us a lot of information about what is actually core to what makes this show work and what is fun, but maybe not necessarily necessary.
Right.
Like, I think, like, on our channels that we've been working on for a really long time, like, Half is Interesting, or Wendover, in your case, there are really specific things we know. Like, we're like, okay, well, we can't put a human being in the thumbnail, and we can't make a video about space, and we can't make a video about an animal. Like, they're just, like, really specific things. With Jetlag, you know, we kind of went into this season being like, well, this season doesn't really have challenges in the way that we've normally had challenges. Is that going to kill the whole season? We just don't know.
Yeah. And that was a big thing that I remember, especially y'all, were like quite worried about, because that is a fundamental shift.
Yeah. And we ended up with a little bit of a middle ground where like the curses basically are the challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they're infrequent. I mean, there are whole videos that go by where one doesn't come up.
Right. Right. And I think, yeah, I was definitely nervous about a season with no challenges, because I was like, you know, that's a lot of the meat of the show is like, mm-hmm. you know, the strategy is the overarching thing, but the actual units of content that make up an episode is very often a lot of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And the strategy kind of strings them together. And this was a game that was just all strategy.
Yeah. So, I mean, the good news is, well, I mean, it's all good news, but like, I think hopefully that tells us that we can push the boundaries more, assuming that we still have that really strong strategic core that is rooted in travel. But I know that like, we have lots of ideas of games that like break somewhat the mold of what jet lag is. Well, I shouldn't say what jet lag is, but like maybe break out from what people might expect.
That innovate.
Yeah. Similar to how like hide and seek, I think, likely breaks out of the mold that people would have expected ahead of time. So I'm excited for that. And speaking of the future, how are y'all feeling? How's your sleep schedule doing?
I'm still randomly falling asleep in the middle of the day for like 20 minutes.
Don't do that.
The truth is, Sam, I'm jet lagged.
What?
Oh, and that.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why?
Well, because we recently got back from the island nation of Australia.
Ooh.
Where we filmed season 10 of Jet Lag the Game with Toby Hendy.
That is true. And it went really well, I think.
I think it went great.
Yeah. We have revealed very few details beyond that, and I don't think we'll be revealing much more right now. But what I'll say from my perspective is, like, Toby and I had a lot of fun the first season together. I think we had even more fun this season. It was really great to have her back. And man, she plays well. She knows how to play jet lag.
Mm. She's a scholar. She's a scholar of the form.
Yeah. She is very much helpful in this team. And what else could we say? I want to be careful to not spill too much.
I would say, like, next season, I think, like, brings back some classic jet lag energy, but with a lot of new mechanics,
yeah,
and systems that are, I think, fun and fresh and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's like, it'll feel at its core more like a quote unquote traditional jet lag season, but we tried some new things and I think that those really worked quite well.
Yeah.
I think they did.
Yeah. I think we have something that it's certainly, let's say, stressful. Do you think that's the right adjective?
I was very stressed, but I usually am.
I think that this game has more like high tension moments and like sort of big weird swings than any game we've ever played before, which was exactly what we were hoping for.
I would say that this game is maybe our most well-designed game in terms of that the design worked exactly the way we intended for it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're torturing the audience right now. This has got to be horrible for them.
Yeah.
Maybe not our most well-designed game. I don't know, because I think maybe Tag is, but...
Well, I think what you mean is, like, I mean, it's tough to say whether it was, like, the best design game, but, like, in terms of the result that we wanted out of it...
Right.
Like, how we wanted the game to play out versus how it actually played out due to the game mechanics that we designed.
Right.
It basically played out exactly how we wanted it to.
And I would say that, like, Australia was a very tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of figuring out a game that really worked there. And I think this is about as good of an Australia season as we reasonably could have done.
Yeah. It's one of the most limiting geographies we've ever, like,
right.
It's limiting in the way that the US is in terms of like inconsistent and often non-existent public transport, and especially essentially none between the cities, but even smaller geography, not physically, well, a little bit smaller physically, but like in terms of just the number of cities there are. But we went to some really cool places. The game had endless exciting moments, I think. And y'all had fun hats.
We did.
We got some fun hats.
And that's really all a game needs, right?
We got some fun hats. We got some fun hats. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say we saw a wallaby.
Ooh. Yeah. People will have seen that we saw a wallaby at this point.
That's true. I think that's in the teaser that we saw the wallaby.
Mm-hmm. So that's the thing about what we want to say now.
I think that's enough.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is like we're already in post-production, already chugging along. So things will come in a time.
Oh, well, you know what else actually maybe is worth mentioning? The Getaway was announced.
Oh, yeah.
With no details, but it was announced and I have seen chatter.
There's been lots of speculation. A lot of people are very wrong about what it is going to be.
That is definitely right.
No one has, I think, gotten close to guessing what it actually is.
To be clear, The Getaway is not truly a Jet Lag spinoff.
No.
I would not call it a spinoff of Jet Lag.
Yeah.
It's from the producers of Jet Lag.
Yes.
In the same way that, like, a movie can be made by the producers of a different movie, but it is not a spinoff.
Yeah. And by that, we mean it's by Wendover as a company. So we're sort of all working on it. But I think the extent of what we can say now is that we're filming it soon. And it does involve travel, but it is not intended to feel like a season of jet lag, because in that case, it would just be a season of jet lag.
Yeah.
It's something different, but I think it's something great. And it is the highest budget project we've ever worked on.
Yeah.
Yep.
People have trusted us with too much money.
Oh, far too much.
Look, let me just say, Tristan heads, get ready. It's going to be a whole lot of Tristan.
Don't say that, because that's not true.
That's overpromising. We haven't even asked Tristan whether he wants to appear on camera.
It's mostly Tristan.
That's also objectively false, but okay.
We'll see. We'll see.
All right. But yes, I don't actually know when we'll have more info out about The Getaway, but I would bet if you follow our socials, you'll see some stuff posted from production eventually. We're filming it next month.
It's true.
That's the extent of what we'll say. Anyways, this has ended up as a rather long podcast episode, but, you know, it's the finale. We have lots to say.
Well, it was the finale.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to mention that we are going to every other week.
I was going to get to that. I remember.
Well, you said to remind you, and that's what I was doing.
Well, yeah, but if I forgot.
I didn't know if you had forgotten.
Anyways, yes, we are going to off-season schedule from this point onwards, because we don't have enough ideas about wait, that's not true. No, because what's our excuse? Because
things are better in small doses sometimes. Sometimes we got to make you wait for it.
Because we're going to spend the time we would spend recording an extra episode every other week, editing jet lag faster so we can release it faster, which is actually literally the truth.
That actually is true. That actually is
true. And that actually is a big reason. It's not only is there not as much to talk about, but also we can use that time to make the show that I would admit that I think people want to watch jet lag more than they want to listen to The Layover, unfortunately.
That's not true for the people who only listen to the podcast, of whom there's gotta be one.
Yeah.
There's gotta be one.
There's at least one person who only listens to this podcast, they don't watch the episode.
Well, there's gotta be like one like 4-year-old who parents gave them a Nebula subscription and just like does not have a fully developed brain and just clicks on random stuff on Nebula and has decided that he likes the way that Ben sounds or something.
And that's who I'm making content for. They always ask, like, who's your audience? Who are you trying to make this for? And that's who I'm trying to make most stuff for, is a 4-year-old who just is randomly clicking on things.
He's my hero.
Yes. We like brain rot content.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll be back in 2 weeks for the first of the off-season episodes, when we'll be doing... Ben, promise something amazing.
I designed the last game, so now it's on Ben.
Well, it may not even be a game. It may be sort of a... I would describe it as a sort of four-dimensional...
experience.
Mind experience. Mm. So get ready for that.
Wow.
Whoa.
We mess with time?
Look, I can't make any guarantees, but I guarantee that you're never going to be the same.
Perfect.
Can't wait for that. We'll see y'all then for that. Goodbye.
Goodbye. See y'all then for that.
Bye.